pop me shoes off, peel off my socks, take the change out of my pocket, get rid of the scrunchie. There's my this, there's my that. Then I tell him, look, I have a lot of hairspray in my hair today also, so put that down in your notes. That could come into play. The doctor just stares at me. I go, all right, here we go. I step on, clang, tilt up again, and then the doctor does the rudest thing possible. He slowly and meticulously starts tapping the one-pounder across the beam to the right. Kick, 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 kick. I'm like, what the fuck? Then he shakes out his hand. I'm like, oh, is your hand hurting? Forever, forever. And then finally goes, moves a tiny bit. I go, okay, okay. And I look up, 165. I go, 20 pounds. I gained 20 mystery pounds that I don't know about. And he goes, Adam is not going to like this. I go, fuck you. You don't know Adam. Do not talk about my friend. And do not tell him. The sad part about this, aside from the fact that the doctor gets the big closer joke, is that I didn't even know where I gained the weight. Mystery weight. It sure wasn't in my wiener, I can tell you that. I can vouch for that. I do wish that happened, though. I wish guys were like, oh, I gained weight, and it goes right to my dick. It's always right in my dick. You know what I mean? If that were true, I'd go to Taco Bell and drive through in circles. Girls are like, I gained weight in my boobs. They get so big. I'm like, okay. First of all, is that bad? Not me, though. I'm a dude. It does not go to the wiener. It goes to weird spots. It's so bad. It gets a little lumpy. But how fun if it went to my wiener, right? Am I right, everyone? I'm looking around the empty booth. Am I right? A couple weeks later, I see Chris Rock on the set, and I go, can you believe I gained 20 pounds? And he goes, yeah. And I go, what do you mean you believe it? He goes, well, you were getting in a Val Kilmer area there. You know, when he's on the beach with his big belly, people were whispering. It's making me nervous. You can be old, but you can't be old and fat. And I go, yeah, right. And he goes, and you have to be rich. I go, got it, got it, got it. That's not even a joke. That's like a Chris Rock proverb. When I was a kid, I didn't get sick much. We didn't have insurance, so my mom never took my brothers and me to the doctor. We had sort of a you're fine policy around the house. If anything happened, it'd be like, you're fine. Mom, should I go to the doctor? My stomach really hurts. No, you're fine. I cut my leg open. You can see the bone. You're fine. Little Bactine on there. Bactine is barely an antiseptic. I don't even know what it does. But it was thrown around a lot back then. Sprayed everywhere. Bactine for cuts, for scrapes, for flu, for broken bones, literally anything. Migraines. There you go. Mess my hair up. There you go. Off to the playground. As I get older, though, it's sort of the opposite. I have fake things wrong with me, and I want more medicine. Back then, I actually had things wrong with me, but I never took a pain pill or a Vicodin. I did a backflip when I was 15, landed on my face, and I guess I did it wrong because my neck has been hurting ever since, for real. But I never took anything for it till I was on Just Shoot Me. I think about all those times I whacked my head or got hurt or broke something skateboarding, and I never took a pain pill. Aspirin was the best we could do. It was aspirin or Bufferin or Anacin or other words that make me sound super fucking old. Here I am these days looking for fake doctors to give me drugs. Because I like to dabble in a little codeine now and then. I got a little Wayne in me. My middle name's Wayne. So you can see why I could make that correlation. By the way, codeine's great in pill form, whatever, I'll take it. The codeine I take for my neck is legit, but that only counts about 3% of the time. The rest of the time, I take it for fun. Or as I call it, and some medical reports, recreationally. Actually, that's what the country calls it, too. We're on the same page on this term. I've always said that I won't take so many drugs that I ruin whatever shred of career I have left, because that's probably not the way to go about it. I'm going to ruin my career the old-fashioned way, with lack of talent. As I get older, I go to doctors sometimes, and I ask for a couple of Vicodins for the neck, or for this, or for that, whatever. Just general Vicodins for achesness and painsness. It wasn't until I got sick recently that I stumbled upon a real game changer. The old codeine cough syrup. Oh boy, this stuff is magical. Real Aladdin material. It's not as strong as Vicodin. I can never take a full Vicodin because I'm a pussy and that's true. But this syrup is like taking a third of a Vicodin. You know, like a little teaspoon. Not even a whole teaspoon. So I feel good for about an hour and that's all I need. I'm not a super fucking drug addict guy like Sid Vicious or something. I just want a little pep in my step for an hour a day, maybe at dinner, whenever I take it, right? You get it. That's why cough syrup is perfecto. It lasted way past my cough and sickness, but the big bummer hit me. Oh no, the little bottle is empty. When you go into a spiraling depression because you're out of the medicine that gives you a buzz, that's the first sign you're in trouble. It's like the redneck joke. If you run out of cough syrup and start looking for Dr. Feelgood in the yellow pages, you might be a drug addict. That's Jeff Foxworthy. Sounds a little like Chris Rock. Too bad it's the same chapter. So the next time I got sick, which happens about once a year, I'm normal. I couldn't wait to get more codeine cough syrup. Except this time when I got some, it wasn't the same kind as I had before. This is literally a buzzkill. I don't know what the difference was, but it wasn't that great, and I just had to get through my sickness and not have any fun with it. The next time the sickness came around a year later, I told my doctor this plight of mine. I said, here's the kind of syrup I had last time, and here's the kind I had the first time, and the first was way better. So let's do that. Chop, chop. And he goes, oh, those days are over. They don't like us to give that away anymore. And I blame fucking Lil Wayne and Bieber. Allegedly, legal alert, whoop, but I did see it on TMZ. Because these motherfuckers started drinking it in a cup with Sprite and ice and a Jolly Rancher, and they called it Lean or Scissor or Purple Drank or whatever, and suddenly it's a thing. And now this thing gets out there, and then the medical board finds out, and now cough syrup gets taken away from me. What the fuck did I do to deserve this? I was just quietly having my own little fun over here, a little buzz once a year. Now I'm getting hosed because these guys are drinking a bottle of it a night. A bottle, folks. I have a teaspoon. I can handle it. When I order 6 bottles a month, yes, cut me off. But 1 a year isn't going to rock anyone's world. I'm constantly stewing about this. Now I'm getting worked up again, too. One day, which all of this is leading up to, this is the long, long, long windup, I tell my friend about the bummer of the lack of codeine cough syrup, and he goes, hey, my friend's a doctor, but he's a cokehead and a drunk, and I see him out all the time. He's always partying. He'll do anything. He'll get you anything you want, dude. Literally anything. You go in there, you give him the kind of cough syrup or whatever you want, and you'll be set for a year. I go, holy shit, this is great news. He's like, yeah, he's as crooked as they come, dude. I'm like, finally, these guys aren't extinct yet. Michael Jackson's guy fucked everyone, too, that Conrad Murray bullshit. Crooked doctors are on their way out, and I hate this. I hate it times 1,000. My friend writes down the doctor's address. Here's his office. Just go in there. I go, can't he just meet me on the street corner or an alley like a regular drug dealer? No, you go to a fake office visit, he'll hand it to you, and then you just scram. You skedoodle, dude, and you got a fucking buzz. And I go, all right, you go with me, all right, to break the ice so it's not super weird. By the way, it's about to be super weird. A couple days later, I pick him up, we drive down to the doctor's office. We have to wait in the waiting room. By the way, this is a nice office right in the middle of Beverly Hills, which has to be expensive. I'm already a little nervous thinking, I wanted this guy to be maybe a little crookeder, you know, maybe working out of a van or a food truck or a strip mall. This is weird. It's too nice. And I go, hey, do I meet him out here in the waiting room or do I have to go inside? And my bullshit friend goes, dude, just chill here. All good. I should know in my head, he has no idea what he's fucking talking about. So the receptionist calls my name, tells me I need to fill out some forms and insurance information. Health history, like 45 minutes. I look at my buddy like, what the fuck? And he just nods, you got this. He makes the face like, just go through the motions. Come on. You like that cough syrup? So I go, yes, I do. So I fill him out, and a few minutes later, my plus one goes in with me, as if I'm 11 years old or something. I need like a chaperone. It never occurs to me to think, doesn't this look crazy that my friend's going in the examining room with me and I'm an adult? But right away, the doctor darts his eyes at my friend. And I'm like, okay, here's the big reunion, here's the secret handshake, here's the cough syrup. And all he does is go, oh, hey, man. And my buddy goes, hey, 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 hey. And the doctor goes, hey, I met you before, right? Do you go to Squeebies? Or whatever fake bar for this story. And my buddy goes, dude, I see you all the time, dude. Literally all the time. We party together all the time. Now it's hitting me that, they aren't BFFs like, you know, Kendall and Haley or Gigi and Bella. No, this is two random fucking drunks at the same bar that give each other head nods across the room in between playing like that sawdust fucking shuffleboard game. So now I'm more nervous. Doctor looks at me and goes, "So, what seems to be the problem? Who's the patient, you?" And I go, yeah. "Oh, yeah, I just have a cough, wink, wink, and I need the cough stuff, wink, wink." And he's like, what kind of cough?" I go, "You know, the kind where you don't sneeze, but you cough." Meanwhile, I'm like, "Okay, enough questions, guy. I got to get somewhere. Give me the bottle. Let's go." He goes, "Well, are you coughing up yellow or green?" And I'm still stupidly not getting it. I go, "Which one's a better answer?" But now I'm getting more nervous because I'm like, is this guy fucking around with me? By the way, I'm a superstar. Time is valuable. He goes, "Well, let's get the nurse, take your vitals. How long has this been going on?" And then it hits me full bore. This guy doesn't know what's happening. I'm in a real Beverly Hills doctor's office, a professional doctor. I'm getting an exam. My buddy's a fucking idiot and a bullshitter, which I already know. So why didn't it dawn on me? It wouldn't change now. I don't know. I immediately snap into my professional patient behavior because I'm scared now, like I'm going to get popped. I go into a room with the doctor and I sit through all the bullshit. Now at this point, I'm just ad-libbing. Thank God I'm a natural-born ad-libber, improver, comedian, LOL. I'm just spewing out sick-sounding things and symptoms. Finally, the moment of truth. He goes, "All right, you don't sound too bad. You don't look too bad. I'm not getting anything. But I'll give you a Z-Pack, give you some aspirin. Take the Z-Pack if it gets worse or turns into something. Other than that, you should be fine." And then I hit him right between the fucking eyes with the cringiest question of the month. What about that cough syrup or whatever?" He just stares at me and goes, "You don't need cough syrup. You can get some at the store if you want." I go, "Store? It's funny. No, but like, you know, the good kind that, helps me sleep." That's the way I was pitching it. He goes, "Nah, we're not allowed to hand that shit out unless it's a real serious case and you're not even close." He can tell I'm disappointed. I'm like, "Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I guess. Yeah." Then he goes, "By the way, I'm not the kind of doctor that just gives that shit out, you know? You know I'd lose my license." And I immediately go, No. Yeah. Of course. What the fuck? What are you talking about? Who wants that? I'm mad at you because you think I'm saying that. No, that's crazy. Dude, you hear about that guy that killed Michael Jackson? That guy should be in jail. I mean, fucking firing squad. I mean, nervously spewing out anything I can say that doesn't make me look overly guilty, which I am. And as I'm walking out of there, my buddy has the balls to go, "Dude, give me half." I go, "Half an aspirin? Get fucked. Dude, you just embarrassed the shit out of me and it cost me $4.50 for a visit. I didn't get jack shit." He goes, "Oh yeah, I thought he might burn you on that, but I was crossing my fingers." You were crossing your fingers? That wasn't the same sales pitch I got an hour ago, you dickhead. So I had to get my real, actual annual physical recently, not the movie kind. And by annual, I mean I hadn't gone since grown-up, so it was very much overdue. Problem is, when you turn 40, you have to go, "What? Why is that funny?" Yeah, I'm 41. But I'm a believable 40, right? I could play 40 in a Broadway musical. Because everyone's sitting sort of far back and they don't see the laugh lines, the wrinkles, the dents, the dings, the bruises all over my face and grill. If I was in Dances with Wolves, I would have played Crow's Feet, okay? That's funny, but it's a side note. And it's a little old, but I sort of worked it in. As I was saying, when I went to the doctor as a kid, it was really only the dentist, again, because I wasn't allowed to go to the doctor for anything because we didn't have insurance. Yes, Spade, we understand you were poor as a kid and you're rich now. But that's not why I'm saying that. I'm giving layers and textures to the story, you dumbass listener. Note from editor, don't call the listeners dumbasses. Me. Duly noted. But I'm going to give you guys a tip. When you go to the doctor, it's very tricky. Mostly because when you get a physical, you know two things. Your wiener is going to come out at some point, which I hate, and the doctor's going to stick his fingers up your butt to check your prostate. I wish there were an easier shortcut. I wish I could get him Waze or something for this, but right now the tried and true way is to go straight up my ass. And the worst thing about it is that my doctor's sort of a big guy, so I look at his hands and his fingers literally look like five huge dicks. Every finger. There's no good option. He even tells me to just pick a finger and he'll put it in there. shakes them up, you know, like a joke, and then puts them back out. He goes, I won't even give you the biggest one. You pick. Dealer's choice. And I go, that one. Meanwhile, it's like 7 inches long, so I can't win. That's always a tough one. Before he sticks his finger up your butt, the wiener is coming out. I don't like the doctor knowing and seeing my dick. I don't think a lot of guys do, because there's no way you can prep for it. When I go in there, I like to puff it up a little bit, you know? If someone's going to see it, I like to just slap it around. Maybe like the equivalent of 4 pages of Hustler. Just get a bit of a chub. You know, a couple cc's of plasma down there. Fatten out some of the wrinkles. Just to show it off a little bit. Now, I don't want a full rod. That's the wrong message. But just something. Anything better than the way it normally is. So, the physical's an hour long. And there's no way you can prep half a rod and hold it for a full hour. You'd have to be so hyper-focused on porn in your head or something dirty, there's just no way you can keep it halfway up, literally. And because the wiener might come out at the beginning of the hour, it might come out at the end of the hour, you just don't know, so there's really nothing you can do. So I just say, forget it. I'm just going to go for it. Whatever happens, happens. I walk in, and naturally the first thing the doctor says is, okay, drop your pants. I go, whoa, whoa, whoa. Hold on. Wait a second. Give me a second. I turn into a chick. I'm like, let's talk for a minute. I mean, my God, I just walked in. But my mind is spinning and racing. I'm like, hee, ha, hoo, what do I do? What do I do? I got to like stall for 5 seconds. I go for the Hail Mary. I point at nothing over his shoulder and I go, oh my God, who would bring a parakeet in your office? And he goes, what? He turns around. I start slapping my dick. Ksh, ksh, ksh. Bang, bang, bang. Go, go, go. Now, now, now. Slam it in the drawer once or twice. Hit it with the prescription pad. He turns around and goes, oh, that thing's looking pretty good. And I go, ah, yeah. That's just all day, dude. That's 24/7. Don't even worry about it. Get the word out. Because you don't want to get a bad review. You don't want him to go, hey, everything's perfect except for that tiny dick. Let me just scribble that down. We'll hand it into the internet. So he starts checking me out. And when he checks my wiener, he has to check the balls, the whole thing, looking for lumps and bumps, obviously. The first thing I do is tell the nurse to scram. I go, hey, beat it, sister. I don't need 2 witnesses around here, you know? Take 5. So the doctor gets in there, and he's poking and prodding. But he acts all professional. He goes, all right, let's check over here. And he starts rubbing above it into the side, and he goes, oh, okay, whoa. You have a hernia. I'm like, holy shit. And then he goes to the other side of my belly, and he goes, oh, my God, you have another hernia. And then he starts feeling my balls and goes, do you want to get some sushi later? I'm like, what? No, I already ate. What are you talking about? And he goes, all right, you need to get these hernias fixed ASAP. You have a double hernia. Fuck a duck. Now I'm damaged goods. Plus, this doesn't sound like a young person's thing to women. No kid named Aiden has a hernia. No kid named Connor. I'm just Dave with the boring fucking name and the boring double hernia. Gather around, gals. So I book my surgery, ugh, for a week later. And if you don't know what a double hernia is, the actual definition, which is gross, it's when your small intestine breaks through the muscular wall that holds your organs in place on both sides of your abs. Pretty gross. In summary, it's sexy and a panty dropper. Before you go into the operating room, the doctor gives you a list of things to do. More like don't do. Don't eat aspirin before surgery. Don't drink alcohol. And then it says at the bottom, no pets allowed in the operating room. Really? I'm sure they don't mean my raccoon Randy. I mean, he's a bit of a chewer, but I'm sure he won't be a problem. Who the fuck is bringing pets in there? I'm sure it was some old lady that brought her dog in and he pissed on the scalpel or something. I go in there and the anesthesiologist is standing over me, and I say, hey, listen, if I live, I'll give you a good recommendation on Yelp. And he was like, oh, very intrigued by that. Oh. So another fun fact is, before you get hernia surgery, they have to shave you. And I hate this because when I'm out cold, I have no control over my body. I'm lying there, I'm under these bright lights like I'm at the produce section of Ralph's or Safeway, and I look so pale, gross, and disgusting, and there's all these people in there, and I think they're all doctors, but who the fuck knows? I'm fading in and out of consciousness going, wait, is that the guy from TMZ? Then I go into a snore. I have nightmares the whole time because it's a 3-hour procedure. And you know they're going to be fooling around with my dick half the time because it's funny and they have time to kill. Of course, when they have to shave it, they're moving my dick around with some salad tongs, you know, and you know they're doing little bits for Snapchat or something like fake putting it in their mouth like a cigar, like, hey, it's Joe Dirt's dick. Hey, look, it's the guy from Grown Ups. Look, Groucho Marx. I'm pretending it's a cigar. They're all laughing and kicking and scratching. I know they do it for sure. Why wouldn't they? I would. It's funny. When I wake up a few hours later, I look under the sheets. I'm like, oh, thanks, guys. I didn't need a full Brazilian down there, but I appreciate it. Bald from head to toe, meaning waist to bottom of my balls. And then the nurse goes, all right, we're going to have to give you a catheter. Okay, listeners, I don't know if you know what a catheter is, but if you get a chance, get one. Grab one. They're super fun. A catheter. Okay, picture something that looks like a Slim Jim or a pencil and jamming it into your pee hole. Really just something that doesn't fit. How have they not gotten this down to science at this point? Folks, it does not fit. My pee hole is the size of a pee hole. And this thing is a pencil, all right? It's not a great match. But of course, she starts ramming it and jamming. I'm screaming. She's got two guys from Game of Thrones with her helping her like they're knocking down a door. Huh! They get a running start. Ha! Hi! I'm screaming, freaking out, and then I finally go, where the fuck were you when I was lights out? God forbid you do this 20 minutes ago. You were reading Us magazine and waiting for me to come out of it. The operation takes 20 minutes. I'm lying there for 5 hours. And then you're like, wake up, wake up. Wake up for the worst pain of your life. I want to make sure you're wide, wide awake. I didn't want to dare put this in while you were sleeping. Then she plugs the catheter into a convenient pee bag. I go, so what do I do now? Carry this around like Paris Hilton's dog? She goes, no, I don't want it to be embarrassing. So I'm going to tie it around your leg. I go, oh, wait, so that makes me cooler? Like I'm in Young Guns or something? Walking around like a cowboy in the saloon? Ching, ching, ching. Girls are like, ooh, is that piss around your leg? I'm like, yes, it is, gals. I tip my hat. Thanks for the help, nurse. At least now I have some dignity. Chapter 7. Cursive. So one day I was on the set, you know, just kicking back, being a star, blah, 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 whatever, typical day. You go to work, memorize your lines, cry about the hours, etc. By the way, when I say the set, that's showbiz lingo. It means the place where I shoot TV shows. Try to keep up. Anyways, the lead actor on the show, that's more lingo. The show means the TV show. The lead actor was 24 years old. Now, this is kind of new to me because I'm usually doing stuff with people my age, like Grown Ups or the sequel, Grown Ups 2, I'll Hold for Applause in Your Car. Now, I don't know if you know this, but I've been on a few shows in my day. Here's the thing. I used to play the guy in the show, but now I'm the guy's dad. So when you're the guy's dad, no one on set really gives a fuck about you. And they avoid eye contact with you, and they get mad when you take too many granola bars from craft service. All that shit. Not only that, but after a while, the age difference on set comes into play. But in a different way than when it was when I was the guy on the show. Do you follow? Okay, here's what I mean. You didn't even need to hear that beginning part. Here's really where it starts. I'm on the set. Like I said, I'm about to shoot a long scene at a desk. And I have so many lines that I panic because I don't think I can remember them. That's the hardest part about the movies and TV. You can't remember your lines. So I start feverishly writing my lines on the papers on my desk. Now, this happens quite frequently with actors. Mostly me, because I'm stupid and a bad actor. So I use this crutch. George Segal and I did it a lot on Just Shoot Me. Seriously. Oh, I hear some applause. Oh, my God, a few of you remember it. Oh, thank you. George is a great actor, obviously. And he barely used his cheat sheets. You know, because if you write them, it actually helps you remember. So half the time when you just write them, you remember them. But I, on the other hand, use them like a teleprompter. Teleprompter, more lingo. So I'm writing down my lines, and my co-star, a cool 24-year-old guy, he busts me. And he goes, oh, what are you doing? So now I'm popped, so I offer to help him, too, to be a lazy actor. I go, I'm just writing my lines down, but I can write yours down if it'll help you. Oh, by the way, he went to Juilliard, too, so he's, like, really good. And I'm, like, this classic dipshit Arizona guy that stumbled into it. And then he says, no, but literally, what are you writing? Is that script? And now I'm puzzled. What do you mean, script? It's the script. Is that what you're asking? I thought, shit, this dude really is new. He goes, no, I mean, is it script? Is that cursive? And I go, yeah, obviously. And he goes, oh, I can't read that anyway. Don't worry about it. What the fuck is happening, folks? I go, wait, are you kidding me? He goes, no, I can't read cursive. They don't teach that in school anymore. Wow, is that true? They don't teach cursive in school. He goes, where would I need cursive? Now, when he says this, I get flustered and confused because I'm old. Hey! But I had to learn cursive as a kid. This is so weird to me. I remember my teacher writing on the chalkboard, and you would doodle it until you stumbled into an L, you know, or an E in cursive. I remember the capital Fs were very tough. But when he asked, why would you need that? I actually don't have an answer. I said, you know, I can't think of something right this second, but don't you think it'll pop up somewhere? He goes, I doubt it. I type, I text, and I email. That's about it. That gets me through the day. I go, but what about if you have to sign an autograph? He goes, oh, I just put my initials. Fuck, that was my only argument. And then I said, I guess you don't need it. And he goes, yeah, I don't. Now I start to feel horrible because whenever I'm with a girl and I'm scribbling down jokes or jotting down an address, jotting, which is another old word, she's probably thinking, what are you doing, old man River? Those might as well be hieroglyphics. I can't make any sense of it. Yeah, no shit. Now I realize I look like I'm John Hancock without the powdered wig. Oh, honey, just give me a second. I'm just punching up this Declaration of Independence, just adding a few amendments to the Constitution. You'll thank me later. The right to do Molly. The closest thing to cursive that young people recognize is calligraphy. So when girls see me writing jokes, I'm basically putting out wedding invites in their eyes. I hate these old man habits, and I can't even spot them anymore. I carry a newspaper to breakfast, and it never crosses my mind that girls are staring at me like it's a cat looking at a cucumber. They don't know what to make of it, and they're scared of it. I'm just becoming creaky and crumbly, and there's no turning back, folks. This is me turning my head. Chapter 8. Trouble Downstairs. Now, I don't like to talk about this unless I'm getting paid for it, which I sort of am for this book. LOL, sort of. But I had a little trouble downstairs recently. I know what you're thinking. Downstairs in your 7-story mansion? No, but that's a good guess. And I don't even know if you'd call it a mansion. I mean, 55 stories high, 47 acres. I just call it home. So I'm out with a lady friend, and things are going swimmingly. It's an old-fashioned term started by Michael Phelps. So someone, I forget who, it doesn't matter, once said that a gentleman is a patient wolf. I guess this is sort of true. This is our third date. I made a point of not making any moves on our first and second dates because I didn't want her squawking around L.A. like the town crier, saying I was so typical, I did exactly what everyone thought, and I was trying to score on her. That's a conscious effort on my part not to give her any ammo out there to trash me. I don't want to load the cannon to shoot it at the castle. Another mansion reference, I crammed it in there. Anyway, for our third date with this lovely lady, I take her out, I give her a couple of egg rolls at some Chinese restaurant, and then floor it back to my house and try to score on her. Because even though I'm pretending I don't want to, I actually want to fool around. And this is the third date, and if you look it up in the dictionary, this is it. Third date. Shit goes down. Woohoo! I think that's an old cheer from high school. So we're on me couch. This story is basically about how things didn't work out down south for me, and I'm not talking San Diego, and I'm not talking about even souther, which would be Cabo. I'm talking about barely south. My wiener. Wiener Junction, if you're on a map. Now, to this point in my life, everything seems to be working in that department, you know? It's funny what a waste it is as a kid, because from 7th grade through high school, I had literally about 30 stiffies a day. I had so many pup tents in social studies alone, I should have been sponsored by North Face. But when you get older, they're not coming so fast and furiously anymore. You almost have to schedule them like a play date. I'm like, I want to get a rod Friday, I'm not going to drink Wednesday, Thursday. So back to present day. Because I'm not really bringing much to the table in the looks department, or in the superstar department, the least I could do is have the courtesy to bring a hard dick to the party. So when the girl's ready for action, and it doesn't have to be super huge, I'm starting this rumor, but at least it needs to point over 8 o'clock. Hard, picture clock, straight up, you get it. Not even straight up. Just over the horizon. So this lovely lady, Becca, not even close to a real name, is on the couch with me, and we're making out for the first time, and everything's all innocent. And out of the blue, she goes, "So are we going to fuck on the couch like high school kids?" I was like, oh, like it threw me back. Because we've been making out, and I'm talking Frenching for a good 20 minutes. And the whole time, I have a full rod and reel, like I'm supposed to. But this part catches me off guard. I didn't see it coming. We didn't kiss on the first two dates, and now we're jumping ahead a few steps. So I guess I'm nervous because I go, well, we can always go upstairs to my room and close the deal. Real estate joke. But I sort of mean it. So we go upstairs. She's totally up for it. So she strips down. She's very attractive, a little out of my league. So I'm nervous and I'm buzzed, but I can't blame that because I'm always buzzed because it's nighttime. So I think nothing of that. I mean, nothing weird's going so far. So I strip down and walk over to the bed. I'm thinking, oh my God, what am I forgetting? I'm definitely forgetting something. Oh, that's right. A hard dick. I look down and literally nothing's going on. By the way, my dick isn't that photogenic when it's straight up, but when nothing's happening, it's really a fucking disgrace. So I start to freak out. A, she's seen it. I already have a witness. But I don't even know how my dick gets hard when it does, so I don't really know why it's not getting hard. So I don't know what to do. What do people do when this happens? They try to slap it around, slam it in a drawer. I don't have 2 pages of Hustler to sort of kickstart it, get a couple cc's of plasma down there. I don't know what's going on. But of course I'm panicking because I see her eyes dart down on my boring, not happening dick. She's like, do you need a few minutes? Like I'm a pitcher on the mound and the batter's waiting. I need to get my arm warm. I go, I guess I do. So embarrassed. So I kiss her again. And then I'm sort of pretending to do the dirty deed. And it's like stuffing a marshmallow in a piggy bank, which is super, super accurate. And she's not responding at all. So I turn the tables on her. I go, hey, you like that shit? She goes, I'm sorry, what shit is that? I go, that, not fucking, but you like that grinding, like friction down there, like, you know, whatever's going down, that sort of burning sensation. She goes, no, not really. Rather have you get a boner like a regular guy and stick it in, like, you know, we're two adults. And I go, oh, so you're like a whore that needs to get laid all the time? She's like, okay, whoa, whoa, whoa. That's enough trying to whip the tabes around on me. And this was dirty pool. I sort of deflected my disaster and made her the bad guy, but it didn't stop there. I'm like, hey, everyone, this chick needs a boner in her every second of her life. Once this not-so-thought-out tactic fails, then, and she's just staring at me, rolling her eyes, I change course, and I just try to kiss her again. And I already know it's the last date, so, you know, make the best of it. So things start to work now down there. Great. I get enough going in there. It's like when you have a spare tire, or you get that air thing in your tire, you're like, this is enough. This'll get me home. So we start to do the dirty deed, and I make the mistake of flipping her over because she says, flip me over. So I think we're in the clear now. I flip her over, and in that 3 seconds, I lost the rod. It was literally like, beep, beep, beep. Picture going down like a UPS truck, then backing into me. Beep, beep, beep. Dying off. Goes into rest mode, sleep mode. I'm thinking, how did this go away in 3 fucking seconds? So we're back to square one. And I'm scared she's going to be out there giving me some bad Yelp reviews around town because I'm giving her quite possibly the worst fucking of her life. So we decide to wait a little bit. Talk about some of my movies so I can get my dick hard again. Look at some old headshots of myself. And whatever happens, it works and we finish. And then I make sure to splooty. That's a medical term. Because I don't want to be one of those weirdos that just taps out during a fuck and goes, okay, time, like a bull rider. Over my travels, I've learned that women don't like it when you just stop during sex and call it quits. You have to have some ending, if you get my drift. It's like 4th of July. They need a bit of a show so that everyone knows it's over and everyone goes home happy. But if you pull it out just because you're tired and you go, Okay, that was great sex. Think I'll be sleeping now? They're like, dude, if that dick's hard, you're sticking it back in, because if you don't finish that deed, she might think she did something wrong, which you don't want, or you weren't into it, or whatever, and you don't want any of that. Luckily, I finish in quotes, cause splooge, and I'm off the hook. But I definitely got a 1-star rating max. And the next 2 weeks, I was just dedicated to trying to get her back so I could give her a solid 2-star fucking and ramp up my rating around town. It's like Uber, you know? You gotta get back in there a few more rides. Chapter 9, Tired After Sex. What is it about having sex with a girl that afterwards I'm tired and they want to do jumping jacks? I'm literally thinking, do I have Adderall in my jizz? Because after sex, I'm tapped out and she's like, have you ever thought about re-roofing your house? Maybe painting the basement? I'm going to go move some cinder blocks to your attic. I'm like, wait, what's going on? She's like, what's the difference between a Tahoe and a Denali? I'm like, Jesus Christ, I just want to snooze, all right? I just gave you the best 2.5 minutes of your life, and I did all the work. But she keeps blabbering on, so I go, hey, can you grab that ZZZZZ quill on the end table? Okay, thanks. And now, can you take a huge gulp of it and then put it back down? Z-quill is the best. I just want to make Z-quill darts, so right after sex, when she walks in the bathroom and goes, do you have any extra towels? I'm like, whew, oh, hit her in the neck. She slaps her neck like in the bad movies like this and then drops to the floor. Why isn't Procter & Gamble on this? This is a guaranteed hit. They would fly off the shelves. You could use them with kids on airplanes. P.S. I did ask my doctor if there was Adderall in my load. He put it in a test tube, shook it up, and then he sipped it and he goes, nope, all jizz. Good news. I go, yeah, I knew it was a long shot. Chapter 10. My Dad, Sam. All right, this one's going to be a little tricky. This is a chapter about my dad. And the way that it fits into this audiobook is, I'm a dad now. So for my whole life, I was looking at someone who was my dad up above me going, oh my God, you're my dad. And now suddenly, I'm a dad. Now the difference, and why it caused some complications with my own dad, is because he was sort of a ne'er-do-well, which is putting it mildly. I think fuck-up is more on the nose. The hard part about having a dad that splits is that you always sort of want your dad around. That's also the advantage the dad has. Because I have a dad who's cool and funny, but he's a bit of a skirt chaser. Times 1,000,000,000. We grew up in Michigan, boring alert, fast forward. My parents had 3 boys, Brian, Andy, and David. We were 8, 6, and 4. I was the baby, the hero. I don't remember much about Michigan, but I remember we moved to Arizona when I was 4. What I didn't know is that my dad sort of disappeared for a month before the move, and when he disappeared, my mom didn't know what to do. She didn't know if he left her or what happened. So she put the house up for sale finally, which is crazy. Crazy. I didn't know this till a year ago. Side note, my dad was a bit of a boozy Susie, so factor that in. So he saw the sign in the yard one day when he was driving by, and he came back and he goes, oh, hey, I have a job in Arizona. Sorry I've been gone a month. I've been dealing with a lot of business. This is a great bullshit thing that you could tell your wife back then. I mean, obviously it does not fly now, because the wife would have LoJack on your phone, tracker on your Instagram, your text, your phone, your bills, your credit card, your Apple ID. But back then you could get away with, hey babe, sorry, it's just been nuts. And that's the end of it. Your whole excuse was, it's been nuts. And that covers a full month of being away, not coming home, not calling, nothing. And the wife's supposed to go, okay. I was so worried this whole time. I didn't know it's been nuts. Oh, okay, that clears everything up. It was like Mad Men, but way worse. And he was in advertising, so if you watch the show, you get a feel for his 15-martini lunch lifestyle. So he takes us to Arizona because he has this new job, in quotes. And when we get there, he goes, hey, guys, funny story. I don't have a job here. Meanwhile, no one ever questioned the whole job thing, because it would be so crazy to say that you had a job but you didn't have one. So no one thought it was a lie. Long story longer, he proceeded to get us an apartment, and then he leaves my mom. And then he sticks around Scottsdale just drinking and being a little bit of a Casanova, to put it mildly. My mom had to get 2 jobs to make ends meet. P.S. My mom was beautiful, still is. But she had to get 2 jobs and deal with us, and my dad didn't have a care in the world. He's out there clicking his heels, doing his sales job for a magazine for 3 hours a day, bar hopping at night, hitting on widows. This went on forever. I saw him about 2 or 3 times a year. We'd be sitting at the door with our bags because he would call us and say he wanted to see us. What I didn't realize back then was it was a control thing. We never had his phone number. He would call us when he felt like it. So we couldn't call him when we were sick or we needed him or if we wanted to talk. He would just call every couple months and go, "I want to see you Friday." And then we'd wait by the door and sometimes he wouldn't come. That was a real mind fucker. Shorts, cowboy boots, bags. He wouldn't show up. So, fast forward. I buy the guy a condo when I get some money. That's how crazy I am. Why am I taking care of his Life of Riley lifestyle? Because I'm bananas too. Because I'm his kid and he made me bananas. Blaming him. So when I start to get known, just a smidgen of fame around Arizona from doing stand-up, just a little paprika. Oh, he dove in on that one. And he decided we should move in together. Now, I want to live with my dad, of course, because it's fun. And I never had my dad around. And he's really more like just a fun, annoying roommate. So we did it. We shared a one-bedroom with 2 single beds on 68th and Thomas in Scottsdale. And he said, "If there's a tie on the door, it means I'm getting laid. So stay in the kitchenette." Which I did, a lot. And he goes, "Hey, if there's a tie in the door for you, I'll stay out there." Meanwhile, he knew I was never getting laid. So one time, and this is a big windup, I was dating a girl at U of A. We'll call her Christy because there's probably 3 million Christies in the world, so you can't find her. This is back when I was probably 19. So I started hooking up with her, which is a miracle. She's pretty hot. She would drive up on weekends for a mediocre bone down. I was the one supplying all the mediocreness. Christy did her part fine, like every girl back then, which was to lay on her back, not make any noise or movements, and just wait it out. That scenario played out till my mid-20s when girls started to participate in the activity, bring some game to it. But back then it was pretty basic, by the numbers. One day after I hook up with Christy and she heads back to U of A, I realize something's not normal in Pube Town. No relation to Cape Town. I'm a little itchy down yonder. I look down at Mount Pubis and I see a bunch of little black dots that look like pepper down there. And I'm thinking to God, this better be actual pepper. But upon closer inspection, the little black dots are moving, ladies and gentlemen. And upon closer inspection, they're not just black dots that move, they are crabs. Yes, listener, I have crabs. I have no idea what to do, how I got them, or what's happening. I'm just in sheer panic. My first thought was that I got them from a payphone. I heard you can get it from that. Or maybe a bed. I didn't know. Maybe a telephone pole? I don't know. I was terrified. All these things were down there pole dancing on my pubes. Side note, later when I did some research, I found out that people can get crabs on their eyelashes. Can you think of a more sickening situation than getting crabs on your eyelashes? You're talking to a girl and she's like, do you want to comb the crabs out of your eyelashes before we take this any further, Mr. Wright? I'll give you time for a puke break. Anyway, Christy was coming in for the weekend from U of A, and I was so worried about giving her these crabs, so I decided to go to the pharmacy with the meager savings I have from my valet parking job to buy some crab shampoo. A little pert for the penis. It was like a scene out of American Graffiti. I didn't want to get just crab shampoo, so I was like, I'll take some gum, baseball cards, crab shampoo, a slinky. Believe me, the cashier's eyes darted up on the third one. So I get home before my dad, because he was my roomie. I scrub a dub dub. By the way, with this skeezy shampoo, they give you a little crab comb that's about 3 inches long, and you're supposed to use it like a real comb, but comb the dead crabs, their bodies, out of your pubes. They're dead carcasses, all right? Back when people had pubes. It's so grotesque. I tried to keep it fun by making a shampoo horn out of my crabby pubes. The fun was quickly replaced by the quiet screams of each crab dying and falling into the drain. Then I cleaned all the sheets, boiled them, microwaved them, did everything you're supposed to do, washed all the clothes, blah, blah, blah. I finally get this whole shitstorm cleaned up, tubbed and scrubbed, clean as a whistle, no crabs, ready for our next below-average sex without any risk of passing these heinous creatures on to Christy. She arrives the next day, looking beautiful. We have a perfectly lovely evening. getting shit-faced at El Torito and boning. And then she's on her merry way back to Tucson. I was happy as a clam. The next day I wake up. I have fucking crabs again. I didn't even put two and two together. It finally dawns on me. I got them from her. I wasn't having sex with anyone else. She just restocked the shelves. Holy fuck, she gave me crabs. Again. And it made sense. She had them in her big, big, big bush. That bush was a condo complex for these guys. It even had a pool. Oh, gross. Sort of makes sense, but too far. So I don't say anything, but I realize this is it for us. I go through the whole routine of scrubbing them out again, microwaving the sheath, blah, blah, blah. That night I get a call, and it was from some mystery girl named Katie. I'm like, Katie? She's like, hey, I'm calling for Christy, because she's obviously too scared. She wanted me to tell you that, you may have noticed something weird lately. I go, yeah, this story's tracking so far. She was like, yeah, I guess she borrowed her friend's jeans. And I go, yeah, and she's fucking other guys. Yeah, well, we can't really trace it, but I go, yeah, got it. I guess I'll fix things on my end again. She really turned into the receptionist character from SNL. Yeah, that'd be great. If you could just be a lamb and never bring this up again. Yeah, thanks a bunch. I was pretty good about keeping it down till right now. Hi, guys. Hi, U of A. Hi, Crab Girl. Hi, everyone from my high school that now knows I had crabs for 1 week there when you didn't know it. Getting crabs is still the closest I ever came to having an entourage. The funniest part of this story, which is also gross, was a week later, I come into the bathroom where my dad is getting ready for yet another date, and he's combing his thinning hair with the tiny crab comb I used to comb the dead soldiers out of my pubes. I stared at him for a second, sickened out, and then I go, I think that's my comb. And he goes, fuck off, I'm using it, finders keepers. And I go, oh, go right ahead. He goes, I know it's your comb, you little prick, but I'm using it. I go, you know what? You can have it, guy. Early Father's Day present. I didn't have the heart to tell him what's really going on. Till now. Hi, Dad. The worst part of the story is I feel like I'm going to turn into this guy because, you know, our dad was like the kid. And throughout my life, for just about everything, my brothers and I are always saying, let's not be the bad parts of Dad. Because there were some good parts. He was fun. He was cool. But no conscience, no sense of responsibility, nothing. Which is not the way I want to run my life. I also realize I'm going to look like him, which terrifies me because he's not exactly Rock Hudson or Justin Bieber for the young listeners. Everything is genetics. I take pretty good care of myself now, and I'm not doing much better than he is. I'm telling you, this guy hasn't had a fucking glass of water in 22 years. He drinks every night, and I have a 1% jump on him. I'll look 1% better than this guy because of genetics. That's all I get. He parties every day. I'm trying to eat vegetables and shakes and gluten-free, and I'm on a freight train with no brakes to Sammyville. You try your whole life not to be like him, and it's just a very tough job. It's just salmon swimming upstream. I have a daughter now, and she came out of a situation with a girl I was dating, and it was not planned. And I get angry because my brothers and I were planned. Now, I'm so happy that I have a daughter, and she's the best thing in my life, but I couldn't picture my daughter being sick and calling me and me not answering, or just calling her without any way for her to call me. That would be too much. It would be too rough. So when I had her, I got this new tidal wave of resentment towards my dad because of his irresponsible behavior and manipulative mean streak. So I stopped talking to him. I know it sounds crazy, but I just thought, holy shit, you really played your cards the way you did when we were kids. That's how you did it. I mean, I like to have fun too, but it can't be 24/7 and literally nothing else. The only thing my dad really did was give me an excuse to be nuts. I can always cry and go, it's my dad's fault. He left me when I was 4. Now I'm crazy. By the way, 100% of girls don't say, oh, I understand. They go, oh, you're damaged goods. Get fucking lost. Take care. Yes, you're exactly like your dad. Bye! I'll end it with this. The funny thing Sammy used to tell me, which I always thought was a joke. When it came to marriage, he used to say when I was like 8 years old, Davey, the fucking you're getting is not worth the fucking you're getting. And I would just nod my head and go, yeah, can I have a Happy Meal? Because I didn't quite understand it, obviously. And the best one was, Davey, marriage is the only game that two can play and both can lose. I would just stare at him and go, you should make hats, Daddy. Chapter 11, Pubes. All right, enough heavy shit. Let's get back to the fun. On the disgusting subject of pubes and crab combs, I have a few words to say about pubes and nothing left to say about crab combs, thank God. Let me walk you through a story about my everyday life. And this is very interesting because it's about my real life. You're going to be glued to your earpiece if you're listening to this on an earpiece. Or you'll be glued to your radio in your car. Or you'll be glued, you get it. This joke could go on forever. Everyone hates it already. In my real life, I went to IHOP. Actually, I'm not going to say what it was. It was just a breakfast place with four initials. Or possibly an acronym, depending on if I'm smart and know what that word means. I went to IHOP. Oh! I went to this place. I ordered eggs like a normal person. And I found a hair in my eggs. Now, this wouldn't be too shocking considering where I am. But I ate them anyway. I ate them because I was in a hurry. I didn't want to wait 20 minutes to make new ones. And there's no witnesses, so who cares? But the worst part was, it was a pube. That's right. You can tell on contact. My investigative eye told me, with one up and down, that is a pube. It was a little wiggly. You know how it is with a pube? You can tell. It's got a little Wessonality to it. You know pubes on sight. It immediately brings up some puke in your throat because you know you almost ate a pube. Actually, the worst part, it was still attached to the guy's balls. I don't want to tell anyone this, but that was easily the worst part. But I ate around it. You know what I mean? And the guy was cool. But he didn't even work there, which I thought was peculiar. Pubes are out there, folks. I was talking about this with Nick Swartzen the other day. You go in any men's room urinal, and it looks like a pube bomb went off. You know what I mean? I know girls are like, I'm hardwood, not carpet, but not guys. Guys are so gross. There's pubes everywhere in that urinal. There's like 100. I go, what are you doing? Just pull your dick out. These pubes are committing suicide. They're jumping out. Are you cleaning a brush? Like, throwing them in the toilet? That's the only place I've ever seen them, and there's way too many. Now, with girls, I don't mind a bush on a girl because I grew up with pubes. I was taught to appreciate pubes from a young age. Actually, I was brainwashed by all the dirty magazines I'd look at. It was like Playboy, Penthouse, Wee, Swank, Scrunt, Hustler, Club. I don't know if Scrunt is one, but it sounds like one. All these chicks had a triangle. Back then, any girl would explain it to you. I'd go, oh, you have a bush? And she would go, yeah, because I'm a woman now. And that's how you differentiate from a child. So what do you like? You like bald? Like a 9-year-old? Like a child molester? And I go, no, 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 of course not. But now if you date someone under 25 and you go, you don't have a bush? They go, oh, is that what you like? I go, no, no, no. I like bald, 9-year-old, child molester. They're like, eh, okay, good. I don't know what to say. I mean, which one's the right answer? Ladies, get together and decide. By the way, they weren't just little triangles back then. Oh, no, it was a babushka. It was home plate. You got Bryce Harper sliding in. It wasn't the manicured greens of Augusta. No, it was the rough of Scotland. And they tried to cover it with those big old granny underpants. It was like an airbag went off in there. Doof! I'd sleep on it like a My Pillow commercial. I'd puff it up. Ooh, cozy. And those pubes were long. Don't let them fool you. It was a trick. They were jammed down and coiled. You pull on one, they're 3.5 feet long. Bow, bang, beep, bang. Anyway, I don't need a big bush. I don't need a blank slate. I'll take something in the middle. Just give me a little paper cut with some cotton candy on it. Hey, you know, let's not get crazy. I'm easy breezy. Simple man with simple taste. I don't know why pubes are so intriguing either. I think they'll be gone in the next 10 years. All the kids will be curious going, Daddy, tell me about the pubes. Like a bedtime story. I'm like, oh, you don't want to hear a boring story about pubes. They're like, no, I do. What's a bush? What's a muff? Daddy, talk to me. I'm like, oh boy, here we go. Some things are better swept under the carpet. Like pubes. You see how I wrap that one up? Tidy bow. Chapter 12, a quick note on shaving your balls. Listen up, guys. Guys, never get drunk and shave your balls. I found out later it requires tons of concentration to get it right. In a related story, they don't make band-aids for balls. You just have to bleed until you live or die. It's a risky business. Chapter 13, Mansion Problems. Okay, there's a difference between owning a house and living in a house. Let me explain. As a kid, I did not know this. I was a little grub worm leeching off of my mom's place. I was a blonde little barnacle. By the way, I'd say my parents' house, but my dad scrammed when I was four, so he wasn't around. I had to kick him in the balls again with that little reminder. My mom and my brothers and I lived in some dumpy place that we could afford, but I never noticed they were dumpy. Sometimes when I drive back, I go, I lived in that shithole. But I liked all of our places. Most of them were small townhouses or townhouses that were slightly run down. Lots of formica, linoleum. Sometimes we crashed with friends or relatives. In other words, it wasn't that bad. It's not exactly the sort of sob story that will get me in the Daily Mail. And even though some of our places were crummy, there was nothing better than being a kid and not giving a fuck about rent or mortgages or broken baseboards or buying food or anything. Everything was always just there. Such a gift. Even that didn't stop me from being a crabby little prick sometimes. I had all this ease, all this stress that my mom was carrying around, and I would still bitch that we didn't have enough apples or the air conditioning wasn't cold enough or whatever. Quick side story, one time when I was a pint-sized 8-year-old punk, my mom had me carry some shit into the house after we went grocery shopping, and I grabbed the biggest bag and hauled it inside. When I got into the kitchen, I stopped, put it on the floor, and took everything out to show my mom what a he-man I was. It was like 4 apples, an orange juice, blah, blah, but it was some, honestly, it was some heavy shit. And as I was giving her the inventory of what I lugged, she started yelling at me for putting all that food on the floor. My strongman act backfired. I was expecting full-on praise, but instead my Hulk-like actions were ignored. Major frowny face. Anyway, being a kid breezing around the house was one thing. Growing up and buying a house is a whole nother. Who knew it would be so fucking hard? I guess everyone did. Owning a house sucks, for a variety of reasons. They cost a shitload of money, and then even after that money, you have to keep paying payments every single month. And bills. It never ends. And shit breaks, like everything. Pool heater, garage door, water heater, doorknobs, anything. My friends always make me feel bad when I have to get something fixed, because I have a decent house, and I seem rich, everyone says I am. But they always insinuate that I'm getting ripped off. The first time I had a roof problem, the worker was manipulating me pretty good. And it's always the same rap. All right, your roof's pretty bad. It is leaking. Now we can do it the right way or the wrong way, the cheap way. What's it going to be? I go, oh, what's the right way? Well, the right way is you get a whole new roof. Now, it's very expensive, but you for sure need it. You'll never, ever have one more problem. Ah, what's the other way? Well, the cheap way is I climb up there and put some duct tape around the pipes, jack a cinder block under the generator. It works about a week-ish. Then it goes to total shit, and then someone trips in the cinder block, they break their toe, and they sue you, and everyone else dies from carbon monoxide poisoning from the leaking pump that's going into the house. But I can do it that way. You know what? Let's do it that way. You're smart. We'll do it that way. Quick, give me a boost. Here we go. Take 20 minutes. Okay. All right. It's so embarrassing. They give you such a fucked up option that you'd sound like a complete moron if you took it. It's unwinnable. My friends always rag on me. Dude, they see you coming. No, I think I got a pretty good deal. Okay. Well, what was I supposed to do? I had a huge leak in my roof. Oh, is that what they told you? Yeah, there's water in my living room. Oh, I bet there is. Yeah, there is. There's a puddle. I walked through it. My shoes are wet. Okay, you're such an idiot, and you believe that. You're so dumb, dude. They see you coming from so fucking far away. They're making so much off you. That's so classic. Then I just stand there staring while they laugh. Huge laughs, belly laughs. Then I buy everyone dinner and their drinks. Because I'm a sucker, folks. And I need new friends. Chapter 14. The Dirty Little Secret About Cover Bands. Ooh, this one sounds intriguing. I'll listen to this one. I don't know if there were cover bands growing up because A, I didn't pay attention because I was too busy digging in the garbage can in the alley for Playboys, and B, I wasn't looking for a worse version of the bands I liked. My favorites were Vanity.